Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Fun talking about saunas, wasn't it? I tell you, I really enjoyed visiting with our guests. And I hope you'll go to my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show, where we've got links to where you can get copies of the book and also a great slideshow, links to a wonderful slideshow that Aaron has put together, Aaron Haudela. So I hope you'll do that. Go to the Larry Mueller Show and we'll help you out. We're going to be turning our attention to the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and talk about bioenergy and biotechnology. It's something we try to do about once a month here, usually around the last Wednesday or so of the month. Visit with John Greenler for sure. John's with us all the time. John is the Director of Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, which we usually call GLBRC. I think it's quicker to say that than Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. But anyway, he's with us today, as is Steve Slater. Steve is the Science Programs Manager for the GLBRC. So we're talking about the research that's been going on in the area of bioenergy, and certainly taking your questions and comments as we move along. You may have some questions, or maybe have some comments about biotechnology or bioenergy. What's the relationship between them? I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, and the email address is talk@WPR.org, or go to the Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question there. John Greenler, great to have you back.
It's really good to be here again. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, and Steve Slater, welcome. Good to have you here for the first time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Steve, you're the Science Programs Manager for the GLBRC. What is the science? Well, actually, you know what? Before we even talk about that, let's just go back to the whole start here. And what is the mission and what is the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center? Let's start with that. And so maybe I'll switch from Steve over to John. John, go ahead.
Sounds great. Yeah, Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. Ultimately, what we're really trying to do is provide sustainable biofuels on a national scale, and clearly we want to be international in our considerations as well. And that really encompasses a number of different considerations. You know, in a more focused manner, we're mainly looking at liquid transportation fuels. What can we provide as alternatives for gasoline, diesel, jet fuel as well? And then how can we do that in a way that not only provides us with, you know, a new source of energy, but does it in a sustainable fashion, addresses issues like, you know, supporting our agricultural communities, working in terms of providing crops that are really going to kind of build our larger ecosystem dynamics, and also, you know, once again, build our communities, our rural communities, and also do it in a way that kind of gets us away from where we kind of are currently in terms of biofuels, in terms of food versus fuel. Are there biomass type materials that we can use that aren't going to compete with food production? So, for example, moving from using corn grain to a residue from agricultural practices such as corn stover, all the corn plant that remains after you've harvested the grain, or maybe you've heard about switchgrass, or going further up north here in the state, you know, forestry residues. There's lots of materials that we can be looking at that will provide us hopefully with an energy source that will be renewable and really build our economy.
You know, I'm just thinking here, and maybe, Steve, you could talk about or define for us bioenergy versus biotechnology. Is there, could you do that for us first, Steve?
Sure. Bioenergy is the use of biological sources to produce to produce fuels. So in the cases we're talking about here, our main charge is to take biological material like agricultural residues or forest residues and turn those into a fuel. Now, there's a couple ways you can do that. One way that we're all familiar with is just burning it directly in the same way we would do in our wood stove. But since plant material is ultimately made up of cellulose and hemicellulose, which are polymers that are made out of sugars, you can actually take wood or grasses apart down into those individual sugars, and then you can convert those sugars into liquid fuels in the same way that you would do, say, a fermentation with cornstarch to make ethanol. You can do the same thing from wood or other types of biomass. So that's really what biofuels are. They're fuels that are derived from biological sources. And the point there is that the energy from those fuels is captured every year from the plants growing, capturing energy from the sun. Biotechnology is a much broader sort of field that applies everywhere from biofuels through pharmaceuticals, through different types of food production. It's a very broad field that uses biological sources to produce something of utility.
How did Wisconsin become such a leader in the area of biotechnology and bioenergy?
I think they're
go
really,
ahead, John.
Well, one is the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is actually a consortium of 12 different institutions, and we're really concentrated here in the Midwest. But we have researchers, faculty, ranging from the West Coast all the way down to the Oak Ridge National Lab, the Department of Energy. So we're really national in terms of kind of the resources that we tap into, the knowledge and the capacity to study this area. But, here in Wisconsin, Michigan as well, we have a lot of researchers in Michigan. I think there's a couple different things which are coming together. One is we're diverse in terms of our biological resources. Here in the South, we've got, our agricultural base. Up north, we have, exceptional forestry industry. But then I think you can overlay that with, I think a long history of research in basic biology, the plant sciences, microbiology. We could go on listing all the different dimensions of research that are really critical in terms of really being able to move into these next generation biofuels. We're very interdisciplinary, in the scope of the research that we do. We have computer modelers, economists. And so, we really have here the set of, the materials that, the capacity to produce all this biomass, and corresponding to the absence of, other energy sources, be it, petroleum products, we could go on talking about that. But then, overlay that with this, ability to do the research to economically, move forward with biofuels.
Yeah. Well, we have callers online to visit with you. Let's go to Gary in Bosque Bell. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome, Larry. I got a couple of questions. A number of years ago, there was a controversy in the northwestern United States with a process called whole tree logging, where the trees would be cut and the whole tree would be removed from the forest, and that brought up the issue of the nutrient cycles in those forests. And by removing the whole tree, you were removing a large part of the nutrient cycle. And here in the Midwest, we can't grow any crops without adding artificial nutrients to the ground, because we've taken all those nutrients out through cropping for the last 150 years. So my question is, whether it's crops or logging or whether it's biofuel, it seems to me like you're removing nutrients from the soil, whether you're using treetops or switchgrass, and eventually you're going to have to artificially put nutrients back in that soil. And I'm wondering, have you dealt with that issue, and what is the the answer to that?
That's a very good question. Steve, you want to take that?
It's a great question. It's one that we're definitely dealing with. So you're absolutely right. When you take materials off the land, that material isn't just, say, the cellulose that we're trying to harvest, but there are other things. There are minerals in there. There are things like potassium and phosphorus that get taken away at the same time. And those are the same sorts of things that that we tend to put on the land in order to increase fertility. So absolutely, this is one of the issues that we're looking at. The center itself has a very large and focused group that's working on sustainability. And when we talk sustainability, we're talking about economic and ecological sustainability of these systems. So when you talk about a situation like that, not only are you talking about the sustainability of taking materials off the land that might have to be replaced, you're also it also shifts over into the economic models of what does that cost and all of those sorts of things and where does it come from. So it is something that we're focused on. Our sustainability group is looking very carefully at what is a sustainable amount of biomass that can be taken off in different environments. We're also looking at ways that we might recapture nutrients, that minerals that get taken off. For example, you could imagine that you might convert cellulose into a liquid fuel, and in that process, in the end, that liquid is not going to contain the potassium and the phosphorus and the magnesium and the other minerals, but they will be there in the process. And so one of the options that we're looking at is what would it take to collect those materials and actually recycle them back onto the fields.
Oh.
So it's a major question that we're looking at. And since we're a basic research center, our main goal is to try to understand what those issues are and figure out how to solve those issues. Excellent question. Definitely something we're looking at.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. But Lori in Green Bay coming up next with a question. But you know what? I want to just remind you that we're talking today with John Greenler, Director of Education and Outreach Programs for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, and Steve Slater, who is the Science Programs Manager for GLBRC. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Net. We'll take a little break for news, and then we'll be right back with you. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, turning our attention to biotechnology and biotechnology for biofuels with two guests, John Greenler and Steve Slater. Steve is the Science Programs Manager at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. John Greenler directs education and outreach programs for the GLBRC. Great to have them along. Questions? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. And Lori in Green Bay has been waiting a long time, so let's go to Lori. Lori, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. About 4 years ago, my boss started putting money into a retirement account, and it's with stocks and stuff like that.
Yep.
It's the bank that I'm going through, the trust company, is based out of Chicago, and they had absolutely no clue as to what to invest in, because I said I wanted renewable energies and organic farming, that sort of thing, all green funds. And it took weeks for them to even find anything, and they finally did. But here in Green Bay, they're trying to get, and probably will, the Oneida Nation is trying to get a biomass plant approved. And I was just wondering, how do you get any information on stuff like that to invest in these things, especially considering they're Wisconsin-based?
Yeah.
Well,
let's go to Steve Slater for that one. Steve?
It's an interesting question. Much of this technology is in its infancy or just really starting to grow, which means that many of the companies that you would be interested in investing in are generally very small at this point and mostly funded through the same way that many small venture companies get funded through venture capital or angel investors or those sorts of things. So what that means is that most of those small ones aren't really out there in a way that where you can buy public stock. Now, it's not that only small companies are involved. There are a lot of big players involved, too, including many of the large energy companies. Companies like Shell and BP have made significant investments in these areas because they are in the energy business and they see this as a new opportunity in the areas of energy. So it's a fairly complex world out there, but anytime you start talking about energy production, that's going to be the case.
Yeah, John, comment?
Yeah, just one resource that you might want to check out, no formal connection, no endorsement, but there's a website called Biofuels Digest and a corresponding daily listserv, which really covers a lot of areas, dimensions around bioenergy and biofuels, from kind of synopses of the research to lots of information about these various companies, startups, whatnot, that Steve is talking about. So Biofuels Digest, Google that, and that might provide you with some good starting points to kind of look at, who some of the players are. They definitely talk a lot about both the research and the investment, also kind of what's going on in terms of federal, state legislation regionally, and once again, nationally, internationally as well.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks, Lori. Thank you very much for calling. And let's turn to John in Oconto County next. John, hello to you.
Well, good morning. Good to hear this program.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, some time ago, I was hearing about some researchers that were working on some sort of a metal plate system that turned biomass into directly into fuels, and maybe 2 years ago or something, and they were going to be moving into a larger facility to test it. And I've never heard anything since. I'm just wondering if that just kind of pooped out or
what.
Well, or what?
Well, I'm looking at John and Steve, and I'm not sure. John, any notion?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what John is referring to, but you know, one possibility is we actually have several projects where we're working with people in the engineering school who are really looking at various catalytic processes to be able to once again take these sugars and convert them into any of a different range of different types of biofuels. So, you know, we're also looking at biological systems to be able to do this as well. So I wonder if possibly that's what the caller is referring to, because we think a lot of these catalysts are actually kind of bound on various surfaces to basically facilitate these kinds of chemical reactions to produce, you know, a wide range of different potential future biofuels.
Yeah. Steve, anything to add on that?
No, not really. I'm not sure exactly which system he's talking about, but John's absolutely right. I mean, there's work going on both within the center and also some private companies that use metallic catalysts to convert sugars into fuels. But I don't know the exact system.
Exact one,
exactly,
sure.
About.
Okay, there you go, John. Thanks. You might take a look at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center website just to get an idea of the different kinds of research. I think it's at glbrc.org, is it?
Correct, yeah. glbrc.org.
Yeah, or if you're on my Facebook page, we have a link from the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you could take a look there. And as long as we're on that topic, what all are people going to find at that website?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Larry. There's a really wide range of material that's available. We have a whole cadre of staff in our communications office that are really constantly trying to update the content on our website and really be considerate of what's needed. So there's information out there for the general public, both to understand, you know, what our research is and what some of the kind of basic questions are, what the answers are on biofuels. So we even have like a biofuels 101 component to our website. You can really drill in and get, you know, some very specific information about the different research projects that we're involved in and who the faculty and scientists are who are doing that research. We also have a lot of materials, this is my bias, for educators. So if you're a teacher, K-12 or undergraduate, and you're looking for ways to incorporate biofuels topics, content, there's a lot there as well.
So, and that's again at glbrc.org. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the kinds of research projects. And by the way, you know, I asked you once, Steve, I started to ask you what your job was as science programs manager, and then I got away from it. So let's go back to it for a minute. What's your role?
Sure. Well, my role is to try to integrate the science that's going on in the center. It's very diverse. We've already spoken a little bit about some of the ecological and economic work that's going on. But we also do everything from plant biochemistry through genetics and biochemistry of yeast and bacteria that can be used to make fuels, through chemical engineering routes that can be used to produce fuels. It's a very, very diverse center, and that's its strength. But it means it requires a lot of effort to make sure that everything is working smoothly and that people are talking to each other. The main purpose to build a center, as opposed to taking this funding and divvying it out into individual grants, is to try to create something that's really more than the sum of its parts. And we have a strong belief that the place where innovation happens is where where researchers who aren't normally talking to each other and aren't normally thinking about somebody else's field of research start to do that. And you start to get those new overlaps created, and you get expertise and coming in from different angles and new ways of looking at a particular problem. So the center's job is really to try to catalyze those sorts of interactions and then make them durable. And I think probably one of my major roles is doing exactly that. Mm-hmm. So it's a great job because I get to spend, you know, the morning maybe talking with an insect ecologist and the afternoon talking with a chemical engineer or an economist.
Yeah. Could you give us an example of where this is working right now? I know that there aren't a lot of finalized research projects where everything has been discovered, but you must have some good examples of where this works.
Absolutely. We've got some great examples of this. So I think maybe one I'll talk about is our enzyme research and our microbial work. So one of the things that we are interested in doing is finding better, less expensive, more efficient ways to break down biomass into individual sugars that can then be converted into fuel. And so one of the ways that we're doing that is taking an ecological and evolutionary approach to go out into niches in the environment where biomass breakdown occurs, look at all of the organisms in those environments, and try to understand the enzymes that they use to break down biomass, because that's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
And then once we have a handle on what those are, we think about ways that we can take those enzymes and then use them in a applied way, in a biotechnology kind of way, to get biomass degradation done for the purposes that we're interested in. Once that's done, then we need to think about how to produce those enzymes, where that production would be done. Is it going to be done in microbes? Is it going to be done in plants? Is it going to be done in some other way? There's this whole pipeline of folks from the ecologists who are looking at these environmental niches through the molecular biologists who are sequencing genomes, and the computer scientists are helping with the analysis, and the enzymologists who are looking at the enzymes that we could produce, and then the microbial geneticists who might take those and use them in an applied way onto the chemical engineers who would scale up these processes and figure out how to turn it into an economical industrial process.
Oh, man. So you mentioned, seven, eight different areas just for that one. And that goes on in all these other...
Exactly. I mean, we could easily list a number of similar sorts of integrated approaches on all kinds of different topics that we're studying.
I have been a little remiss here in not giving the number. If you'd like to join in, have a question or comment as we talk about the bioenergy, biotech research that's going on here, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And we'd love to hear from you. So transgenic plants is something that came up in a discussion. I think Judith brought it up. Can you talk a little bit about transgenic plants?
Sure. The term transgenic plants refers to any plant in which some gene that is not native to that plant has been introduced. Mm-hmm. And we use these as a basic research tool all the time. So, for example, one of the things that we want to understand is how plants put together the cell wall. What are all the genes and proteins that are required to regulate that process and to actually carry out that process of building cell walls? Because the cell walls are made of cellulose, and the cellulose is the biomass that we're interested in. That's the sugars we're interested in, in tapping. So one of the ways that we do that is through a standard genetics approach where we might find a mutant of a plant that doesn't make a cell wall in a normal way. And then one of the ways that we try to identify the gene that's responsible is whether we can take some other gene that we think might be responsible, put it back into that plant to
what we call complement the deficiency. Basically, we're trying to put a good copy of that gene into the plant, into a mutant plant, and see if that fixes the problem. So that's an example of making a transgenic plant that supports a basic research goal, which is to try to identify the genes and the proteins that are involved in cell wall biosynthesis.
So now these might be a part then of biofuels, the biofuels landscape?
Well, it could be that transgenic plants become a part of the biofuels landscape. There are a number of transgenic plants that are already out there in more commercial agricultural things like Roundup Ready corn or soybeans, and BT corn for insect resistance. It may be that at some future date there may be modified plants that also become part of a biofuels agricultural landscape. Whether or not we're going to get there, don't really know at this point. But it's one of the things we're looking at. We're looking at it both from the sort of genetic side of things, and we're also looking at from the ecological and sustainability side of things. And since we take a holistic approach to this issue, we are very focused on creating solutions that are going to meet the needs in all of these areas.
Yeah. So that's a big job. I mean, to try and anticipate all of the factors that could come into play that would reduce the value of what you eventually discover, for example.
Yeah, it's a big job, but that's where it's so important to have these cross-disciplinary teams that are looking at it from so many different angles.
Yeah, well, let's take some calls. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 with your question. Nancy in Pelican Lake, we'll go to you now. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I actually live outside of Eagle River, but I'm on the highway.
Oh, okay.
My question is about the use of ethanol, you know, as a fuel, and we make our ethanol from corn. And why do we do that when it's making food? I think it makes food prices higher. And why don't we make it from switchgrass and other things that people don't eat and animals don't eat necessarily?
Yeah.
That's another great question. Currently, as you're saying, most of the ethanol that we use as a biofuel is coming from corn grain, using the starch in that grain, and it's relatively easy, tried and true technology, economical technology, to be able to go from starch to glucose, a simple sugar, and then convert that sugar into ethanol through fermentation, which we've been doing for a long time through human history. At the same time, as Steve was saying earlier in the show, there are all these other components of plant biomass, the cell wall material. He's been referring to cellulose, which is another polymer very similar to starch, but we really haven't been working with it as long in terms of knowing how to efficiently, economically be able to convert that cellulose material, which is a polymer of sugars, how to break that down into those simple sugars and then correspondingly then be able to make the ethanol. So I think you're making a very astute observation that it's really not ethanol per se, but it's how you make that ethanol, which is really mission critical. So as we look towards future generations of biofuel, there's a good chance that ethanol will be a part of that mix. But where that ethanol comes from, what was the material? What was what was the biomass that we used to create that ethanol is really critical. And then just to kind of go one step further, there's also a very good chance that we may be looking at other compounds other than ethanol. You can actually take sugars such as glucose and related and use that as a starting material to make diesel-like compounds, and we could really go on. Butanol, maybe you've heard about that as a potential biofuel as well. And so as we look kind of further down the line into the future, it may be something other than ethanol, but we really need to look at kind of the whole life cycle of that biofuel. Where do we start in terms of the biomass, all the way down to what kind of vehicles are we going to be using that in? The efficiency of those vehicles? We need to look at the whole picture.
And Steve, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to reemphasize the point about tried and true technology, which is the starch corn starch to ethanol versus starting with biomass. I mean, when we talk about biomass, cellulose, we're really talking about what people would think of as wood. And it's much, much more difficult to break down wood into individual sugars than it is to break down starch into individual sugars. And that particular fact, which we call recalcitrance of the biomass, the difficulty in breaking it down, is really at the core of being able to use cellulosic materials to produce ethanol. And solving that problem is really at the core of what we're trying to do.
There you go. Thank you very much, Nancy, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Steve in Janesville, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. You know, I wonder, why is it we can't take the natural process for producing petroleum products, coal and oil, and replicate that on an industrial scale and accelerate it? Why is it that that's been going on for centuries, but we feel compelled to go through this ethanol stage and using food products, et cetera? Why is it that we can't simply try to understand the process of converting biomass into coal and oil, mm-hmm. understand that process, replicate that process, put it on an industrial scale, and over a longer time horizon, dedicate the area and the resources to be able to have that on an industrial scale?
Yeah. So it's really an interesting question, and in some ways we have worked toward that. But let me give a little bit of context that might make it a little clearer. The fossil fuels that we pump out of the ground or mine in the terms of coal or oil, those were plant biomass many millions of years ago, and they got converted into fossil fuels through a process of pressure and very high temperatures, very high pressures underground, which is a tremendous input of energy that converted them from their, you know, plant material into these sort of broken down materials that are coal and oil. So anytime you're trying to do something sustainably, you're always thinking about how much energy do I put in versus how much energy do I get out. And if we were to try to replicate what the Earth has done, we would be putting in a lot more energy to convert this into oil or coal than we'd be getting back out in terms of fuel. And so we look for other ways to try to get around that.
Yeah, no, I think the caller is onto a really good point in terms of looking to what we know is already happening naturally out there, and clearly the formation of fossil fuels is one example. But clearly, we look around us, you know, on a day-to-day basis. There's plant biomass, you know that's you know being produced, you know, in natural ecosystems all the time. Leaves fall off of trees, trees die, grasses turn brown, and the fact is that matter just doesn't pile up. There are all these microorganisms out there that are a part of the decomposition process. And this gets back to, you know, can we kind of look to these natural systems and find efficient and economical ways of being able to capture that energy? So, you know, can we, you know, in various fashions, can we harness the abilities that those microbes have in our ecosystems and clearly, you know, they're capturing energy for their own use. And can we essentially strike a bargain with those microbes and say, well, you can have some of the energy, but we can have some too to meet our, you know, our needs. So looking at natural systems is definitely really key.
And here we are out of time already. The time flew by, and obviously there's lots more to talk about. John and Steve, thank you so much for being with us. I'm sure we'll probably be doing this again down the road. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much, Larry.
John Greenler is Director of Education and Outreach for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. Steve Slater, Science Programs Manager for the GLBRC. And I'm sure we'll be talking about other aspects of bioenergy and biotechnology with them down the road. So appreciate them being with us today. Tomorrow, just to take a look at what's ahead for tomorrow, the author of a brand new bird guide that covers the eastern U.S., including Wisconsin, will be our guest. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.